This is Susan Schwartz, June 6, 1992. The Handless Maiden, Betrayal of and by the Father. Tape 3 of 4.
I'm with my father and two brothers. All of these are nasty to me. Now remember, he did not actually have two brothers, so these would be shadow figures. The father speaks Dutch with one brother, and of course he did not know Dutch. They throw objects, and I must fetch them. They treat me like a dog. At one point, we see the English Channel. I have the feeling that we are in England. One brother has a piece of chewing gum. He offers it to the father, who refuses. He gives it to the second brother, who secretly gives it to me. I am so pleased to be treated with kindness for once that I throw myself on the floor and cry. Now, this is really a tragedy, isn't it? This situation. Because it shows the distance from the father and from the masculine and how low he really feels in that realm. That a little piece of chewing gum, to be given it in secret, not by the father who doesn't speak the same language, not by the first brother, but by the second brother, in secret, that's kindness. And to have that would make him cry. It would be that important. So even the small contacts are incredibly essential. You know, I think that if the father has paid any kind of attention, or there's been any attention from the masculine to the son, I mean, it can do a lot, right? It can do a lot if a father takes the child out and goes on a walk with him. Talks to him about how he feels, what's going on with you. Yes?
So it almost seems as if he was in a place where that conscious interaction was not done.
Totally.
And the secret channel is not conscious.
Yeah, the English Channel, huh?
It's amazing how our society, in this particular thing, finds the channel.
Right.
To do become your place.
Right.
Break down the boundary.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's the beauty of what goes on in our unconscious, that unbeknownst to us, out of our control, there really is a connection. Be however small, there is a connection that happens, and it's paying attention to those small connections which really helps build up the personality. And in the previous dream, it was the last communication. There's another, you've got to catch these small things as they happen. So they don't get missed. Yeah. Anybody else have a comment? Okay. All right. This shows a little bit of, well, we'll see. I'll read this dream. I have leeches on my back. I have taken off as many as I can. They are in water. In a small sink. The leeches that have been taken off are put in the water in the sink. I asked my Uncle Dan to take them off, but he says that he will not. It is too late. I must go to my mother, and she will put butter on them, and the cold will bring them off. So here we have the who's going to really take care of him. It isn't from the father, uncle, male, side. He refuses. It's like a no. It's like this block that you're talking about. It's not there. He's got to go through the mother. It's part of dealing with the father, of course, is dealing with the mother too. And again, we can't separate them totally. What did you think about the leeches on the back? They suck your blood. Absolutely. They do. Right. Can't see. It's the unconscious usually. Right. You can't see, and you can't reach it. Eve. The back is the support. Right, right. So something was sucking the support out of him that he had been unconscious of. The leeches might be associated also with this kind of compulsive behavior. In a destructive way. Yes.
But to pay attention to the other side, if he can only get rid of
That's right. That's right. Absolutely. And that would get him out of isolation, wouldn't it? Right, for sure. I felt what was said was that the uncle would not help. And I don't know if in the dream, the pudding butter would relate to the feminine, wouldn't it? The milk that's made into the butter. And then the cold brings them off. What is that? Going back to a coldness that then somehow heals, helps, a detachment that almost reinforces that kind of old way of being for him, or the natural way of his being. I don't know. What do you think? Yes?
Some idioms came to mind. One of them is that we're expressing buttering up. And he might have to butter up his mother, or his mother might have to butter up something to make the come a little close, but she's, it's the coldness that separates, not the warmth. She can't come in a warm way to help him, but she has to be that attachment again.
Right.
She has to help with the process of the process.
Right.
From the leeching. You know, doctors used to be called leeching.
And they used to do leeching.
Yeah. You know, I wonder if she had sent, or if he had been sent prior to seeing you, some psychiatrist, and didn't work, or didn't pay.
No. No, he hadn't. But can you imagine, he might have looked upon me as either the leeching part or the mother part. Could have been in either way. Yeah. Freshness. Uh-huh. Right. Yes, he was lecherous. You're right. That's absolutely right. Yeah. She was too fat in his psyche. Right. Right, it's interesting. The other thing about the lecherous part is that I said to you that he had a compulsion, and he really did, this was a compulsion, to see prostitutes. And one day I saw him in the train station in Zurich, quite by accident. The train station in Zurich is huge. I mean, it's like a 12 football fields, just tremendous. And he was way on the other side, and it was on the weekend, and I couldn't figure out what he might have been, because he lived quite a ways from Zurich, and he never said he came into Zurich on the weekend, and it was quite a way to come to see me, so, I mean, I didn't understand what was going on. I kind of wondered, and he was too far away for me to run over and say, oh, gee, hi, how are you, or whatever, just quite uncomfortable anyway. And so I mentioned this to the person that I was doing supervision with at the time, who was a Swiss man, who said, well, the train station in Zurich, which you wouldn't know about, is a place where male prostitutes are. Male prostitutes. Now, he had given the idea that it was female prostitutes, but it was really male prostitutes. And so kind of the plot thickens a little bit, and the lecherous, or who's leeching after whom, and what this kind of accident of seeing him there. I must say I did not say to him, oh, by the way, I saw you in the train station in Zurich. Because I didn't really know how to say that, and it's kind of awkward. But I just kind of filed the information as something that was obviously happening unconsciously that wanted to be noted. And eventually, I would imagine, it would have come out. I didn't really see him long enough to be able to, I mean, long enough, like a long enough period of time to get to that. It was unfortunate, but yes.
The best book to read was a very difficult position, as the necessity of the feminine coming in and being present and being present to the feminine and being present.
To get them off, absolutely. To protect him. Right. 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 Exactly. I think even as we talk, although there's a lot that says, what about this kind of absent, distant father, we also want to try to think, where is he helpful in our lives? How can he, through his absence and through the things that we've said, oh, we haven't gotten, we really need him, is what it's saying. It really can be, he's essential, he's beneficial, he can really help us out in our lives and our development. Yes.
They're using them now for people who have lost fingers and parts of their body, and the healing procedures are putting leeches on people and they take off the drainage and absorb it and allow healing to take place so that actual healing can be
attached.
And they're using them quite often. I think in England, actually, but they're using them.
My goodness.
But they have
these
very
positive things when
there's a cut and a separation.
Because they absorb the infection.
They
Process. So isn't this, this shows us how the symbol expands and expands and expands. It's fascinating, isn't it? That's the beauty of the symbols. Just this, in this dream, we have this leeches, we would think that nothing of them, and boom, there's just a wealth of material that adds to what's going on. Okay, this dream. There are three policemen. One tries on a gorilla suit and becomes a gorilla. Now, the gorilla is what? The ultimate, here's the bodybuilder, the raw energy, the instinct, the kind of the animal side of the masculine. Also, the ape or gorilla is oftentimes associated with the devil, symbolically. In the Egyptian mythology, Seth is usually the gorilla, the ape. And he really had a lot of question about his own instincts. See, the gorilla, it's a policeman. Three policemen. One puts on a gorilla suit and immediately goes over into being that kind of raw, animalistic energy, which he was tremendously afraid of. Which was why he had all the compulsions, trying to bind all of that energy, trying to make sure that it didn't exist, trying to make sure that his male in this kind of a way would not come out because he didn't know how to handle it. He didn't really... Yes, did you? It doesn't say... It says three policemen, so I would imagine that they were all male, right? Pardon me? The English would have male police, sure. And this is several years ago, so for sure they would. But why is it the police? I mean, it's not three, you know, businessmen. Authority, also law and order, right? Punishing people who... Protecting, also, right? Probably dealing with people who are in the Swiss train station looking after the prostitutes, right? Right, because he had no interior control. I mean, didn't feel like he did, hadn't developed it. The other thing that really the father teaches the son is about sexuality. His body in a sexual way. The boy gets an image of his own body from father. He can accept his maleness. He can accept how he wants to express himself sexually when the father is present. Father wasn't present, so how is he going to learn about his own sexual instincts and how to use them? So for him, they're either the police or the gorilla. Oh, they would? Point. Now, I must say that one of the compulsions that he had was to always be on the line, on the edge, And he would do this in these kind of tiny little ways, which shows you how one's energy, if you're not in touch with all of your potential and your energy, it gets siphoned off. He was a very, very bright man. I mean, I can tell you, he had read the Bible a million times, but also Jung and Freud and all kinds of stuff. I mean, he really knew a lot of stuff. He had gone to one of the finest schools in the world in England. It was incredibly, I think it was Cambridge or Oxford, I don't know which one. But I mean, you can't be dumb and do that. So he was very, very smart. He worked as a computer programmer. Here's the robot. And also spent much of his time not really enhancing his potential, but thinking about how he could sneak around and pay 2 cents less for milk in the cafeteria. I mean, this kind of inner intellectual spin, which was a non-development, was really what it was, because he was so smart that the development was just being stopped all the time. Again, if he could have used some of the gorilla energy in a positive way, he would feel better about himself, I think. And that would compensate for the robot, wouldn't it? Kind of, you know, get him more alive and in tune with himself. Anybody else have a comment? Well, I'll tell you.
I'm just curious if you bring that in your pipes.
You know, I usually, in my own style, and that's just me. I mean, everybody does it a bit differently. But I wouldn't speak about it like that. I might speak about it, but not like the inferior function. Partially because this man was already in his head. So if I speak to him about the inferior function, you can bet your life that he's going to have a big argument with me about who's smarter, right? And who has read Jung how many more times, and who knows this, and he'll come out with some kind of a thing and hate it and leave. Because he didn't, and that would have gotten him really away from his heart. You know, because he could immediately flip, and he was always asking me, had I read this book? Had I read that book? What did I think about it? Always in the head.
But I'm even more to say that hearing is the heart and the feeling function is inferior, and the gorilla could be the feeling.
Oh, absolutely. Wild feelings. Right. What he said about the gorilla, because I asked him, why is it a gorilla? The gorilla is susceptible to the woman. Remember King Kong, he said? King Kong was strong, 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 but when it came to a woman being around King Kong, he was weak. And so he was certainly defending himself against what was going on in the analysis. Right?
What was his sense of his persona? I mean, the fact that this person puts on the suit and becomes the gorilla,
right,
not in costume. You
can tell that when you have that persona well in place, you're going to have a boundary. He didn't have really a good enough boundary. So the personal and the archetypal flowed really a lot. And so it could happen like that. What was the sense of his own persona? Not so much. I did notice that a couple of months after he began, he cut his hair or had a different hairstyle. He had gotten some new shoes. So he was developing a persona, but it was not in place very well. He didn't put it on so good. He was very fluid with the world and also very afraid of that kind of fluidity. I mean, you could melt into anything then. So it's not safe. The world is not safe at all. And the isolation would then get reconfirmed because everything feels so unsafe. So here we come to the necessity of the persona, which Jung oftentimes puts down. But, you need to have one. You can't walk around naked. Feels bad in your dreams when you don't have your clothes on. So. Yes.
To me, the gorilla really is a robot that you love to sit on.
Yes.
Especially if it's a teenage situation with some
problem. Right. Right. Compulsively going about things. Or just going about things out of nature.
Well,
what would you say?
Well, I'm thinking particularly of the movie. I mean, that was not a real animal.
Right.
That was a robot. That
oh, right.
That was something man-made.
Man-made. Right. 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 And probably didn't have a heart in it. Or, I don't know. No, but I think you're right about the man-made part. So he wouldn't have felt... Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was an interesting analogy, wasn't it? I think, again, to ask about why the symbols come in the dream, it brings out, you know, what somebody would associate to, and it adds to the symbol. Let me just read you what Jung says about the ape. The eye of the very primitive and unconscious man and the eye of the animal have the same peculiar expression of that mental state before consciousness. And he says it relates to the animal soul in man, to the lower stories in his psychology. Such symbolical monsters are, however, at the same time, prefigurations of the self. So we add on to it even more. Yes.
It's very interesting how this defense, it almost comes in as a defense against the consequence.
Oh, right.
And the defense comes from this very deep kind of instinct of empathy.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very interesting.
Yeah. I also, at the very last time that I saw him, and I must say that he was furious that I left. I mean, he was not happy at all, and equally unhappy that I had referred him to a British man. Whew! God, I mean, how could I do that? And I don't need any more of this work, and I'm really not going to... You don't think I need any more? And I said, oh, yes, most certainly I do think you need more. And I must say I was very, very sad to have left because the work was really undone. And I said to him, it's undone, and it really needs to be continued. I bet I'm not a good better, but I would imagine that he did not continue. And I referred him to a British man because it's so different from me. On the other hand, he would not be ready to deal with the British male. Right? He didn't have enough of the masculine inside to be able to deal with the British male. And the last time he came, he asked me if he had brought his camera, could he have had a picture of me? So, of course, I could say yes, because he had not brought his camera. Because it's kind of a strange request, in a sense. Can I have the picture of you? I wasn't quite sure what he was going to do with the picture. I don't know. But it's an interesting request because it puts one completely up against the wall, right? What are you going to say? You say yes, you say no, maybe. I was curious. I had lots of fantasies about what he was going to do with the picture. At any rate. So let me, you know, it's about 12:25, so how about if we stop, because we've been sitting quite a long time. We didn't really finish with him, but maybe we'll leave him a little and see maybe if we continue when we come back. Do you have any? This is from Ernest Cassirer, an essay on man. A new understanding of the past gives us a new prospect of the future, which in turn becomes an impulse to intellectual and social life. This double view of the world in prospect and in retrospect, the point of departure is in one's own time, and the questions are put and dictated by the present. So we have this kind of nice combination of the past and the present and the future and where we might go with all of this understanding that we hopefully gain. So at any rate,
I was thinking about the gorilla and thinking about the father as initiating work, and the what I have in my notes is that the gorilla is the animal side of the master. Okay, and I had a dream wherein the gorilla was the fertilizing principle. Okay, so the father of the masculine is a fertilizing principle.
We didn't mention that. Good point. Father does fertilize. That's right.
So in that fashion, an initiator suits him.
Yes, because the father then fertilizes the son into being a person. He also fertilizes the wife into being able to have the children, too.
Right. Mm-hmm. And also, as an initiator, he has to instigate ways and means throughout life on the earth plane. Work, job, initiate his own. He has to keep initiating in the company in order to maintain a relationship with the company.
Mm-hmm.
And what about this? That's okay. Now, in order to make something come to fruition, I see the component of the family, the container wherein what has been initiated sustains itself in some growth, to some growth.
Mm-hmm. Could we also say that the father is a container also in a certain way? Wouldn't the father contain in another kind of a way than the mother does? But doesn't the father have to be somewhat of a containing principle? Holding?
Shepherding husband in
a kind of a bringing in for growth, tending. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Part of the examples of the men that I gave you, and this man also, was not being tended by the father. It's kind of absence of tending by the father, and not being contained within the father either. So therefore not knowing how to establish a sexuality, a place. They could establish the intellect or a position in the world, but not a position in relationships. At least the examples that I gave you had that in common. Yeah.
I had a question that came up about the gender of the variants. Having in mind that a young man, 12 years old, who really has three mothers, and mother is there, and his mother is there. And no father figure, so the 7 years ago, one of the ancestors.
The father. Right.
And I'm wondering if he would benefit from the mother.
Well, let's say it could go either way, in that if the father was the aggressor and invader sexually, then that's going to for sure come up in the therapy. And if he's held within the females, maybe he needs that for a while before he could then feel strong enough to deal with the male and not be overtaken, invaded, incested. We might turn that around and say, what happens to the woman who then, should she have, if she's had incest, should she, with Matt, by a father figure or a male figure, how does she do with the male therapist then?
When you're living in that situation, just a boy that And yet I'm not sure that we're benefit from it, but it seems like there's an absolute terror. Some of it's terrible too, it just seems like a real
right, or they fall into finding the male therapist who they somehow get into repeating the ancestral relationship with. So again, maybe we might say it would depend on, as I think as some of us were talking during lunch, how the therapist can be able to deal with the transference and the countertransference and really watch very sensitively with this kind of an example. So if the therapist or analyst is well-trained and knowledgeable, it can be worked with. Now, I think that would go just in general, that the person with the wisdom about themselves and able to handle the situation, either sex might work. Because with either one, something's going to come up, right? Yeah. Somebody else had a comment. Do we take care of all of your questions? No. Okay. Go ahead.
I'm thinking about if we are attracted to men who are like our father, and are somehow in relationship with men like our father, what happens when we develop relationships with men unlike our father? Somehow it seems to me there is some connection, a transmutation occurring within the individual and now happening. I don't know, but I just sense that something happens.
Well, yes, it's certainly a change. It might be one part of how we learn to father ourselves is that we would choose male figures who might be different than our own personal father. But on the other hand, I don't think we can ever get away from the fact that somewhere that person or the people that we are close to are going to carry some of our personal father, or some of the archetype of the father, whatever we put onto father, they're going to carry it. The point is to become as conscious of it as possible.
So if a man were attracted to a man unlike my father, he would be the opposite of what my father is, which would be a principle of his shadow side.
Okay.
Then
what?
Then that would mean that I would be having a more whole sense of what father and what I am.
Well, maybe, but could we complicate it even more by saying maybe the man is different than your father, but maybe you are living out your father? Yes, because truly we carry our father. And so if you look for the opposite father in the man or people that you are close to, if you're looking for the opposite, I will not find anybody like him. Maybe you won't, but maybe you are like him. Now that could be appalling, or it could also be good. It depends, but you can, again, it's going to be somewhere. Can't get away from the father, whether you like him or not. He's there. Yes. Else carries the other part, which the split makes it somehow feel like it isn't so potent. But it is potent because it's split. And then you can't be whole because you have split off the father that you can't handle entirety and have made him split, which makes him more powerful. You have a comment?
I was wondering about that kind of negative ominous situation where there may be a real strong drive to find the opposite. The carrying this kind of negative internal image. You might end up in a situation where you find someone who you think is the opposite, who you are certain is the opposite.
Right. Could be. As well as, again, that situation where the person could be the opposite, but you are exactly what you are trying to avoid. So therefore, yes, the person is the opposite, but you're carrying it. So you haven't gotten away from him. Yes.
On the next level, I mean, suppose you follow this person. How would her as a protective father and this man who is the opposite, how would they have a moment?
Well, what do you think? Do you have an idea?
I'm saying that the person who is the opposite was handsome and not really much with the family. Because somehow there's a conflict that needs to be carried out on the team that was
helped. Right. And actually, in carrying the conflict, it is be a healthy way, as it becomes conscious, be a healthy way to find the fathering within oneself. So that the conflict, the more it is worked outwardly, the more you can get in touch with the father. So it could be an opportunity for development. If it is unconscious, I think what will happen is that it will cause even more and more of a distancing. And there won't be getting close, either inwardly or outwardly in the relationship. And I would imagine that eventually that destructive part inside, or if there's a destructive male or destructive father inside, would cause the relationship to split. He would work against oneself. You can see it oftentimes in people's dreams, that destructive father coming in lots of different ways. But if it's only, then it's isolated and kept within oneself, it means that one can't relate, won't be able to form relationships, keeping yourself the very way that you describe the father to be. Out of contact, absent. Well, there is another thing with, and this is true again of every archetype, but one could have a very positive father, supposedly very positive, where one is very close to the father. Now that could be too close also. That kind of closeness could mean that one also doesn't develop relationships because you remain with the father. He wants, it's the reverse of the mother and the son that we talked about earlier. The father and the daughter could do that, where one stays very close to the father, unable to get out, not allowed to, because the daughter is living out something for the father in a relationship way. What about a positive father? I'm sure that some people have got positive fathers. Positive in the sense where both people allow growth, development, individuation, but that means a lot of consciousness on both people's parts. And it does happen with work. So I think it's there, but it's certainly there with work. Anybody else have a comment? Yes?
The idealized father and the positive father
right.
are confusing.
Well, you know, I think the other thing about all of this is we don't want to have hard and fast rules, because hard and fast rules means, of course, that they need to be broken. And that they won't last, and we don't want them to. We just kind of want to make a general kind of picture and then choose from it what applies. There's nothing wrong with the positive father, and actually there's nothing wrong with ideals either. It's the extension of it. So ideals are okay, but idealized makes something different. And a positive father, a nice father, is great. But if he's too positive, then is there any man on earth who could be as good? Will anybody be so wonderful? Will anybody give all the presents that he gives? Will anybody be as rich or loving or time? Or could get into that too. So once again, we're talking about a whole spectrum of ways of being. All right, so let me kind of do just a couple of more dreams that this man had, and then we'll move on to deal with female side of the father issue. And this dream that I'm going to bring up relates, I think, very much to a cultural issue. And this dream was in 85, which I think is early for the issues in the dream. So I'm with my friend's mother. I kiss her right cheek, and I want to kiss her left cheek. Remember, he's British, so one kisses both sides of the face in greeting. I want to kiss her left cheek, but she stops me. She has a plaster on her lip. She makes a remark. The plaster would be like a cold sore. So it's like a Band-Aid a little bit. She makes a remark about a dog bite and AIDS. We have already shaken hands. I see that I have a bad cut on my hand, and I see that she, too, has a lot of little cuts. I become frightened and angry. I ask her if she has AIDS. She admits it. And I shout loudly, fuck it, fuck it. Now, I mention this dream for a couple of reasons. One, I mean, there's not really clearly a father here. But then we might say, what is AIDS all about, and what's going on here? And again, and I don't want to pin it on the father or the absent father, but just to bring up some kind of questions. And again, this dream was in 86. AIDS was not so discussed in 1986. But you remember I had said he might have something to do with prostitutes, female or male prostitutes. Then we mentioned about the leeches in the earlier dream and the value of the leeches and the cuts. And here we've got cuts on the hands. And what the dream is saying is that through the contact with the mother here, he has gotten a lethal disease, or she might be passing on to him a lethal disease. Wouldn't it be interesting? In the dream it says the mother's got the AIDS in 1986. Heterosexual people did not have AIDS in 1986. So, I mean, the dream brings up a lot of different things. And again, that we might say 8 years ago, 10 years ago, people were not dreaming about AIDS. Now they dream about AIDS a lot. So through the dreams, we're going to see a cultural changes. Like with AIDS, we might also see changes in father figures, too, in the dreams. We haven't had an example of that, but I just use this dream because, again, of the AIDS and the way that he gets it through mother. It's his friend's mother. Pardon me? It's a boundary problem. What do you mean? Right.
Well, I mean, there's a boundary problem with his mother. It's also a boundary problem with his friend's
mother. Right, right. The mothers don't have good boundaries, and he doesn't either. Not in relation to mothers. No, this is a different one. But you know, it could be. There are certain psychological similarities. You're absolutely right. In the fact that they're caught by her, and both of them having very absent fathers. I mean, this man, again, the father was absent through death. The other man's father was alive, but absent, very absent emotionally. Very, an extreme of it. So the mixture of the two makes sense. Anybody else have any comments about the dream? It fits a bit in what we've been talking about with him, doesn't it? The destruction of the body, too, through AIDS. The soul, yes. On the left side. Pardon me?
The left side is the inside side of the mirror.
Is it?
Because in the psychology, for instance, the pattern he left hand.
Uh-huh. And he wouldn't, and he, she wouldn't let him. Uh-huh. What would that mean? What might we say? Because...
It's kind of interesting that there is a boundary, setting up a boundary, that the result of that is
She has a sore on her lip, cuts on her hands.
And she
Right.
And he always had a lot about the Om. You know, the state of his Om as connected to the mother complex is not well.
Is not well, and also if he gets close to her, he will get AIDS. To the anima and also to the mother. So in other words, it's saying that the closeness to mother has caused her to give him a lethal disease. The implication is that one gets AIDS through the cuts, right? That they're open cuts. Right. 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 He has cuts also. In other words, there's an identification between the two, isn't it? I mean, they've both got the same cuts, in a sense. That he could transmit it. Yes. Right. That it could be transmitted to him, but also, maybe there is an implication that he could transmit it. Right. 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 Adult.
Adult. And then, because of the need of sandwich, I think about wounded men who grow up on tied to their mother's infancy.
That's right. That's right. Right.
And this began the question, has he gone to
the right. And can you imagine this man had read the Grail legend? He knew about Parsifal. Oh, absolutely. Sure, sure. He was always wondering, do I have an Oedipal complex? Yeah, he's asked me all the time, do I have an Oedipal complex? Well, but it does, what does the Oedipal complex say? I mean, what did Oedipus do? He married mother and killed his father, so the fantasy would be somehow that he killed off his father.
Without knowing and then
right, exactly.
The oracle before that curse is given, before that oracle is given is punishment for his father having molested the son of the
king. So here we have the molestation again.
Of the younger master.
Yeah.
And so the oracle delivered is essentially the punishment for having sinned.
Mm-hmm. Because you know there used to be in the Greek times that the older man would take a younger man and teach him also physically and have homosexual relations with him about his own manhood. And then the man would go and marry, but it would be part of the initiation of what was to be. But if it's distorted, like the example here, then the curse comes on. Once again, if it fits within the culture, it's okay, but if it becomes a distortion, or if it's transferred into another culture where it won't work, then there's a sin that happens. And of course, Jung always refers to this, the sin of the parents will run on to the next generation. Mm-hmm. Right. One more dream, and then we start. Yes, go ahead.
It's like the almond aspect of the mother's
is wounded. Oh, right.
And he is also wounded. He said instead of using his mind, he was just about getting a little
for him. Right.
Mm-hmm.
The animus.
That's
right. Oh, it is a cheap shot at the mother. That's true. It's angry at her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very angry at her. Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. We might almost say that maybe the fear of expressing the anger at the mother was part of where all the compulsions came from. And ultimately, there should have been a point in the analysis where he would have been able to get angry with me and really say, you know, I don't like this, I don't like coming here, I don't like you, I don't like that. I think there would have been, had to be a longer period of holding before that would have happened, but that would have been part of the process that would have been important, I think, for him, would be to allow that fury and rage and anger to come out. Because then the implication would be also, what might I pass on to him? And also the fantasy of what would he give me? See, as there would be more closeness, then I think that would come up more. So, anybody else? Well, you know, I thought it was both ways. I thought it was both ways. Okay, one more dream here, and then I'm in a house. I am looking for a bathroom. A boy man combination, says that he has seen the ghost of my father. This is not the first dream that he had about the ghost of the father. When the father appeared, outside of that one with the two brothers, the father in two or three other dreams was always the ghost of my father. It was not the father. And also, of course, he had read Hamlet. So the ghost was there too. I say that he has probably imagined it. Anyway, my father would do him no harm. This is an interesting kind of twist in the dream, that the father is really not going to be harmful, and yet the father is a ghost. Not, yes. The boy or man says that, yeah, I'll read it again. I'm in a house. I am looking for a bathroom. A boy-man combination says that he has seen the ghost of my father. I say that he has probably imagined it. Anyway, my father would do him no harm. What do you think about the bathroom? Right, right. And you pick up something important, too, because he had several dreams, several, where the issue of the bathroom, and where does one go? Does one go to the woman's bathroom or to the man's bathroom? And here we have boy or man. What is he? Is he a boy? Is he a man? You know, little boys go into the women's bathroom with mom. A man goes into the man's bathroom. So the issue of the bathroom was one that had kind of a theme to it also. Again, dealing with the body and the question of sexuality. The other thing about the bathroom is, yeah, the context. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Not this man particularly, but other men have said when they've gone they remember being little and going to the bathroom and seeing men, you know, and were just, you know, kind of astounded in a way or overtaken. It's not like the ladies' room. There's no separate stalls. Exactly right. You know, and you have to learn how to act in the man's bathroom. Mother's not going to teach you how to do that, right? It's another initiation. You're our one person who knows about this. But, you know, it's quite a thing, you know, how to act in the man's bathroom. There's a whole amount of protocol around it that mother, is she going to know that? She's not going to know it. There are separate stalls, right? So in this, again, we have another symbol in the dream, which as we expand it, opens up into all kinds of identification for him of what is sexuality, how does one act, what is a man, what is a boy. And again, we have the ghost of the father. You know, I never had a sense of that, nor through the dreams does it seem to be. The abuse or the destructive part seems to have been the incredible isolation and absence of human connection. Mm-hmm. He's looking for his identity.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Right. It's the one thing that does come that says, There's something okay about the Father. It would be a question to think about, but I... Right. Well, this fear of the ghost, the power of the ghost of the Father, and how that ghostly Father had affected the family and had affected him. I think, again, for him it was this extreme isolation and out of contact with people that was what was so destructive. And what was abusive with the Father was the Father drank a lot. So the Father might have screamed a lot, and I don't know if the Father hit the mother. I don't know, but I know that he drank a lot, and that could have felt... Absolutely. Not in a physical way to him directly, but, you know, who knows? You know, I've talked with people, and they say, you know, everybody on my block was hit with, you know, this ruler or this big thing, and nobody was abused. I'm like, are you kidding? That's abuse. What? That's not everybody is hit. That's not child rearing. That's being hit and it hurts. So, you know, we don't know particularly with him. I didn't know, you know, really how his father had, if he had really hit him. Because it could have been, you know, that everybody in that part of England hit their kids and that's just what they did. And so he just assumed, you know, we learned this is another veil of illusion we have over it. Everybody did it, and therefore it's okay. I don't have to mention it. But it hurt a lot. So it could have been there. Somebody else had a...
He may have held, this is a secret for himself, mm-hmm. Because self is the self. He said that he would know that if he was his father, he would
be right. Then we might, something safe at a deep level, right. And we might take it just one step further of also because he did associate quite with Hamlet, who had to do quite a lot in relation to the ghost of the father, didn't he? I mean, he had to really deal with a, yes? Right, right. Too early. Right.
You know, I have to say that there are different dangers of that. And sometimes it's the right block, sometimes it's the right people go to deal with their stuff.
Uh-huh.
And I need to look into that. You know, so, and it's in that context, look away from the father, get in the way. But what's the situation for other people in the hand is to go to the father.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Right, but you see the other and then we get to this other part of bathrooms are supposedly private and one does private work in there, and so there was a part of him that really would not have wanted to show his true self in therapy.
Mm-hmm. Well, along those lines, if you go for the first time as a boy, going for that for the first time, you see a father, and that's another one of the main ones.
Right. For sure. And then we might say with him, he didn't have the father to go to the bathroom with. So then what does that do for him? And the whole area of male bonding, if he can't be there, then he's going to feel more bereft, isn't he? And that whole idea of, you know, how do you learn how to be a man if nobody's taking you into the man's bathroom? Show you how to do it. You got to kind of sneak around and look and see.
You know. Yeah,
exactly. Of course, doing it together. Right. Just briefly, I had said before that I tried to refer him to somebody else. I do want to say that in the time of the work, I guess it's partially in compensation because the dreams are, we don't have exactly a happy ending. It was not really a happy ending, although I will say that he improved a great deal. And in the sense that he was able to get out a bit more. He was able to relate to people a bit more. He found a little more comfort within himself. They were not large changes, but there was a lot of work that was done. And I also purposely use it as an example because it's not a happy ending, and it's not a completed story, and it isn't really, it's got lots of stuff that has, you know, untied ends to it, which in a sense is the way every therapy and analysis is, but we would ideally want to have a few more things sewed up than this. And again, it was too short of a time. I mean, he should have been in analysis for quite a long time. He came twice a week, 9 months. Time of birth, but being born, that was as long as it was. So he's kind of left naked, and of course that's why he was mad with me. I don't blame him. Anybody else have a comment about this? Okay, what I would like to do, if you feel okay about this, is that we would all share what it is looking at a fairy tale that has to do with the father in relation to the female. So how about if we pass these around? Oh God, I forgot I was attached here. And I use this example also because of a woman that I worked with, again in Zurich, who said this was her favorite fairy tale. Now, I must say, before I had not read this, I had not read this fairy tale when she told me this, and so we'll see. Let's go through the fairy tale, and we'll see if we have some time to kind of go through what happened with her. Before we start, let me just read you a couple of things that Jung has said about incest. He says, the actual event of incest means nearly always a terrific blow to the psychic structure, a real trauma, of course. Its effect is a fixation to the time and circumstances of the incest, as well as to the person of the perpetrator. So if the perpetrator was the father, then one is completely hooked onto the father. It can be assimilated, provided that consciousness understands the symbolic meaning of the event. Consciousness, of course, is exclusively fascinated by the external moral and factual aspect of the act, but that is not enough. The main point is that incest arouses an archaic level of mind, he's referring here to the collective unconscious, in which one finds a highly archaic meaning of paternal incest. And then he goes on to say that really one has to treat such a condition one ought to get the patient to reproduce the unconscious fantasies around the incest, which also refers to dreams, bringing the incest issues out. And he says, too, in the medieval representation of the Antichrist, you will always find a careful description of how the father or the devil, we did not use that as a description of the father archetype, the devil, has sexual intercourse with his daughter and thereby produces the Antichrist. A medieval representation. Okay. This is from, I'm reading from, I believe it's the Jung letters. That's not right. Let me kind of think a little in the break. Maybe it'll come to me. Maybe it'll come to me. I'll hope. Okay. All right. All right, let me just say a little bit about this woman. Again, she had said that the figure in the thousand furs was like herself and her father. And that's all she said. It's like she made this statement. Put it out there, this little sentence in which there was a tremendous lot. And said that, in addition to that, I'm going to pass this picture around. This is her. She says, this is her with a man and men, her with her mother, and her sadness in relation to love. Now, we might just again say that all of those have been affected by the father. So we just pass this around, and you can see. It's Picasso from his blue period. It's quite a moving picture. Okay, why don't we, just with that tiny little introduction, let's look at the fairy tale, and then we'll go on. So, why I mentioned her is that we can see how fairy tales directly relate to our life. Absolutely directly. And what I think we might do is each of us read a paragraph and we'll go along and then we'll just kind of work our way through the fairy tale and just look at each paragraph and see what's in it as a discussion of the father and how he has an effect on the daughter this afternoon. Do you want to begin? Okay. Why didn't you actually read until you come to almost the end of the page? Because we'll take big chunks, okay?
I think once her wife was golden hair, who was so beautiful that none on earth could be found equal to her. It happened that she fell ill, and as soon as she knew she must die, she sent to the king and said to him, after my death I know you will marry another wife, but you must promise me that, however beautiful she may be, if she is not as beautiful as I am, and has not golden hair like mine, you will not marry her. The king had no sooner given his promise than she closed her eyes and died. For a long time, he refused to be comforted, and thought it was impossible he could ever take another wife. At length, his counselors came to him and said, a king should not remain unmarried. We ought to have a queen. So at last he consented, and then messengers were sent far and wide to find a bride whose beauty should equal that of the dead queen. But none was to be found in the whole world. For even when equally beautiful, they had not golden hair. So the messengers returned without obtaining what they sought. Now the king had a daughter who was quite as beautiful as her dead mother, and had also golden hair. She had all this while growing up, and very soon the king noticed how exactly she resembled her dead mother. So he sent for his counselors and said to them, I will marry my daughter. She is the image of my dead wife, and no other bride can be found and able to keep my promise to her.
So when we look at the fairy tale, the first sentence and the last sentence, in as we contrast them, or we'll contrast them when we get to the end, really show the movement that's happened. In the first, as far as the number of characters, in the first paragraph we had a king who once had a wife. In other words, the male principle is there. The wife is not there. The female principle is really not there in the first sentence, because it says once had a wife. So it's really the dominant male here. And he very soon is left by her. Now, here we have the reversal that we spoke about this morning, where the mother is very present to the son. We've got this situation where the father is very present to the daughter, and the mother is not available. Now, this could happen also if the mother's not there as far as emotionally goes for the daughter, doesn't model good female ways, is absent inside of herself for some kind of reason. Maybe she's depressed, maybe she's unhappy, maybe she's mad at him, who knows what's going on. And somewhere she says to the daughter, I mean, it was a little bit of a setup. She says to the woman, the wife says to the daughter, you take care of him, leaving the female, the mother, the wife out and not having to relate to the husband. Let me see. Did anyone have any ideas about this kind of first beginning here, this kind of laying the stage? Yeah? Right. Exactly.
So there's a possibility established at the very beginning, the mother is really, you could say, setting this up and sending that to the daughter to an
Right. Which actually in incestuous families usually happens. Now that could be actual incest or psychological incest, but it usually does happen that the mother colludes with the father and sets it up. Right. The revulsion, I agree with you. Also, again, this fairy tale is the one that is incest clear. It's the one Grimm's fairy tale that's completely clear about it. Others, it might be masked or hidden in some kind of a way. This one is absolutely clear. If you remember, the woman I gave you as the example said this is her favorite fairy tale. She didn't say favorite. She said, this is a fairy tale of me and my father. That's what she said. So last night when I had said, you might think about what is your own fairy tale, you can see how whatever you claim as your own will really reflect what is going on psychologically or what kind of struggles one might have to go through in a psychological way to regain oneself. Yes? Close their eyes. Yeah. She vacants. That's right. That's right. That's right. Absolutely. Anybody else have a comment beginning? Okay.
I noted that he gave his promise. There's so many different things because he gave his promise in the circumstances where everyone realized she did not.
Right.
So the time of emotional turmoil for him, well, as soon as she extracted the promise, she got
right. But you see, isn't that true, that people do lots of things on their deathbed, don't they? And they extract the promise, and people are bound to it. And it's known. I mean, you promise somebody when they're dying, and you're going to do it, because you're just overwhelmed with all kinds of stuff if you don't. So you're right, she knew what she was doing, didn't she? What's interesting is that maybe she couldn't continue on being the wife. Maybe she couldn't continue on being the mother, because also she leaves the daughter to grow up as a young woman with the father. How's the daughter going to learn how to be a female? Kind of, because again, the father can't exactly teach that in the same way that the mother could. Okay, the other thing that is interesting is that there is no bride who is equal to this beauty. Far and wide they go, all over the place, and nobody can do it, right? So when kind of the die is cast in the family or psychologically, it has to be lived out. If it's unconscious, if it gets into consciousness, then you live it out through being conscious. In other words, you don't have to do it exactly, but you say, oh, right, That was the underlying thing, and you become aware of it, and therefore you can move through it, and you don't maybe have to live it out like this. Okay. You want to read?
When the counselors heard this, they were dreadfully shocked that it is forbidden for a father to marry his daughter. Nothing but evil would spring from such a sin, and the kingdom would be ruined. When the king's daughter heard of her father's proposition, she was greatly alarmed, the more so that she thought how resolved he was to carry out his intention. She hoped, however, to be able to save him and himself from such ruin and disgrace. So So she said to him, "Before I consent to your wish, I shall require three things: a dress as golden as the sun, another as silvery as the moon, and the third as glittering as the stars. And besides this, I shall require a mantle made of 1,000 skins of rough fur sewn together. And every animal in the kingdom must be a piece of this skin for you." Ah, she thought, "I have asked for impossibility, and I hope I shall be able to make my father give up his wicked intention." The king, however, was not to be deserted from his purpose. All the most skillful young women in the kingdom went forth to meet his three dresses, one to be as gold as the sun, another as silver as the moon, and the third as glittering as the stars. He sent hunters into the forest to kill the wild animals and bring home their skins, of which the mantle was to be made. And at last, when all was finished, he brought them and laid them before her, and then said, "Tomorrow our marriage shall take place."
So let's stop there for a minute. Anybody have any observations about this portion of the fairy tale? Well, right. I think it's a bit of not understanding the tremendous power that the father has. I mean, this was the king, right? And so kings have a great deal of power, and fathers do too. So, yes, she did not realize, and she didn't realize that she couldn't get out of it. Yeah. You underestimated him, right? It's like, you know, if he's been so nice and he helped raise her, then he seems like such a nice guy. And then all of a sudden he turns, and the fantasy is, well, he can't be so bad. I mean, he really won't do this to me. He's really good to me. I think that's part of the fantasy that happens. Yes? Right, right.
And he has to listen to support the young men, the most beautiful women and young men, in order to fulfill.
Well, it's a young energy. So it's like that kind of energy would really get, that's what gets sapped out of somebody when they're under the power of the father in this kind of a way. The energy for growth is really taken away to be used for something else. And so it isn't accessible to the personality. The woman who I used as the example at the beginning here actually had a dream that she said she had this dream that her father, in the dream, her father had come to her and asked her to have three children with him. And she said no. And she said when she woke up, she felt great about that dream. But then as she was coming, she knew she was coming to analysis that day. And as she was coming, she felt more and more uncomfortable because, you see, it was going to be revealed. Or the situation between her and her father would be more revealed. And so there's a feeling of not wanting to let it get revealed, to try to hide it. Yeah. Right.
Huh?
Right. Well, that we don't know yet. We don't want to underestimate her because she's really quite bright, as we see through the end of the tale. But why is the dress golden as the sun, silver as the moon, and glittering as the stars? There's some reason for that. What do you think about the stars? You know, Jung refers to the scintillae. S-C-I-N-T-I-L-L-A-E or A. And it represents, it's like the whole heavenly array of stars, which really is the self. It's a complete array. So it's the masculine and the feminine themselves, which is the last dress. But there is something, again, meaningful. We have the golden is the sun, which is the masculine, silvery is the moon, the feminine, and the glittering of the stars is the self. What about the 1,000 furs? Why does she need 1,000 furs?
I'm talking because she said they must give, not that they must be taken. But that the animals must give.
Uh-huh.
That it would almost be like, no, no, 1,000 times.
Oh, I see. They didn't do that, though.
Uh-huh.
But isn't what the animals represent, of course, the instinctual, and then what has been slaughtered is, in a sense, her instinctual part. On the other hand, if she has the coat of 1,000 furs, she's going to be able to wear it. So she'll get it close to her skin, and put close to her skin that those furs and instincts that she really does need. Somebody else have a comment about it? Okay. The other thing is that this king, of course, is into killing. He's not someone who's really into the growth, except from a very self-centered place. He wants something he's going to have. It doesn't make any difference what taboos in the world are being gone against. He will get whatever he wants. Okay, why don't we read the next paragraph? Let's read the next paragraph.
When the king saw that there was no hope of changing her father's love, so she determined to run away from the castle. In the night, when everyone slept, she rose and took from her jewel case a gold ring, a gold spinning wheel, and a golden hook. The three dresses of the sun, moon, and stars she folded in so small a parcel that they were placed in a walnut shell. Then she put on the fur mantle, stained her face and hands black with walnut juice, and committing herself to the care of heaven, she left her home. After traveling the whole night, she came at last to a large forest, and feeling very tired, she crept into a hollow tree and went to sleep. The sun rose, but she slept on and did not wake till nearly noon. It happened on this very day that the king to whom the wood belonged was hunting in the forest. And when his hounds came to the tree, they sniffed about and ran round and round the tree barking loudly. The king called to his hunters and said, "Just go and see what wild animal the dogs are barking."
Okay, so now we have to say, well, she's not going to go along with the whole program. She does have a lot of spunk. And how interesting to how she used all of this material, that they could go into, the dresses could go into such a small parcel. Isn't that gorgeous? And also, why the staining of her face and hands black? Do you have a clue? Yep, right. But also, I think the black represents a negredo, or the dark stage, the melancholia, the loss that one has to go through and put on, actually, in order to separate. We have, again, similar kinds of themes to the fairy tale last night, the going into the forest, the kind of hiding out space, as well as creeping into the hollow tree, which really is a place of getting born. You go into the hollow of the tree and you get born from the tree, renewed. There are old wives' tales that talk about that. And also, of course, here we have another king who quite quickly comes onto the scene, much like happened in The Handless Maiden. You know, another king is there who's got a big forest and lots of land, and he's going to come around and he finds her. Somebody else have any other comments about this portion? Right. Right. What is the golden ring? Yeah. And also a golden ring has to do with a marriage too, doesn't it? A bonding. Kind of, the ring is kind of an eternal going around and around symbol. What about the spinning wheel and golden hook?
Life itself,
Right. Right. But the spinning wheel particularly, I think, relates to the feminine development because of the spindle in it. Who is it? Sleeping Beauty. Distaff, absolutely. And one is pricked with it in some of the fairy tales, and that represents the menstruation and the growing through a puberty kind of time. So that's within the spinning wheel, as well as girls would learn to become women through these kind of sewing bees that were around, or spinning bees or whatever. And also we have the spinning and the spinning of the moon. So the feminine just is really much associated with this spinning wheel. What about the golden hook? I wonder what that is. Ah, good point. Right, right. And that is part of how we get released, isn't it? You take the projection away and allow it to live inside of you. It's like that man that I gave earlier today who had blown up his father like the balloon. And then as the balloon doesn't need to be blown up, the projection is brought back and one feels much more whole and more oneself. So also the departure from home is not that one doesn't take anything with. You take things with you. Interesting that she took the very dresses that he made for her, had made for her. So it's like she's taking part of the father with her. She's not... She's taking... Yes. Absolutely they do. Absolutely. The point... With him. Exactly. Exactly. So they still carry that quality of not being consumed by the father. But they are related to the father. So in other words, he has to come with, but in a different kind of form. Right, the gifts and not the possessed aspect. Yes, it's a nice quote. Mm-hmm. Right, right, yeah. Which she possesses. So what's happening is the possession is that she can have herself, not be possessed by another, but get the personality back for her. Mm-hmm. Right. 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 Which she takes with her. Because, you know, you have to take that hook with you. I mean, we can't say, well, look at, I'll move 3,000 miles away and I won't be connected. We want to take the hook with us in our suitcase and be conscious of it. So that we know, and then we won't be hurt by that hook, as long as we know that we've got it with us. Okay, do you want to read the next paragraph? No, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, they obey and quickly return and hold the king between the hollow tree of the most beautiful creature, such as they had never seen before. That the skin was covered with a thousand different sorts of fur, and that it was fast asleep. Then said the king, go and see if you can capture it alive. Then bind it on the wagon and bring it home. While the hunters were minding the name that she was, and full of terror cried out to them, I am only a poor child, forsaken by my father and mother. Take pity on me, and take me with you. Well, they replied, You must be useful to cook, thousand birds. Come with us, and you can at least sweep up the ashes. So they seated her on the wagon and took her home to the king's castle. They showed her a little stable under the steps where no great light ever came, and said, thousand birds, you can live and sleep here. So the king's daughter descended into the kitchen to fetch wood and draw water, stir the fire, pluck the fowls, look after the vegetables, sweep the ashes, and do all the hard work.
Okay, why don't we just stop and comment here. Isn't it interesting, this phrase, I'm only a poor child forsaken by my father and mother, almost verbatim of the fairy tale last evening. As well as, and you know, you want to make these parallel fairy tales. Who else does ashes and sweeping up? Isn't it Cinderella? Right. We have this, again, the similar kind of symbols that reoccur in the fairy tales, as well as this king wants to capture alive, not kill. This is an alive one. Why does she need to be under the stairs? No daylight ever comes. She's incubating, absolutely, right. Quite like an animal does. And you know, it's that the negredo time, where one goes really inside and stays in the dark and does not come out to be seen in the light of day. It's like, you know, when you discover something new about yourself, it's very exciting, but sometimes you don't feel like you should tell everybody. It's almost like it's got to cook inside longer so that it retains and gets more strength.
And that is the end of the tape. Copyright C.G. Jung Society, Seattle, and the speaker. All rights reserved. No copying, please.